You're listening to the MLB Pipeline Podcast with your host, Ed Randall.
Hi, everybody. I'm Ed Randall, and welcome to the MLB.com Pipeline Podcast. I'm joined by our draft and minor league experts, Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo. First, reader alert. Reader alert. There's an analysis of all 10 playoff teams and how they were built on our site. Jim, what about it?
Yeah, we do this every year. We break down exactly how the projected playoff rosters were assembled by each of the playoff teams. And I guess the thing that strikes me every year when we do this is that the teams do this in such different fashions. When you look at teams that are homegrown, that they signed and developed the majority of their roster, the Cardinals always stand out, and this year they're joined by the Mets. Those are the two teams that more than half their postseason rosters were, assembled internally. And then you go, you have teams like the Cubs, the Blue Jays, the Dodgers, Pirates, and Rangers. There's five of the 10 teams built more than half of their roster through trades, whether they be, smaller deals that blossomed into big deals, like the Cubs for Anthony Rizzo and Jake Arrieta, or the Blue Jays going out and making blockbuster trades for Josh Donaldson and Troy Tulowitzki and David Price, or you have teams like the Pirates actually have a strong homegrown core with guys like Andrew McCutchen, Starling Marte, and Garrett Cole, and they made more complimentary deals for the likes of Josh Harrison and Mark Melanson. So you have that. That's another way to do it. Then you have, I don't think it'll surprise anybody that the Yankees lead all the teams with 7 free agents on their roster, which would have been 8 if Mark Teixeira hadn't gotten hurt. And he's not technically a free agent, but Masahiro Tanaka, it was essentially the equivalent of a free agent deal. Those guys added up to almost $800 million of contracts if you count in Teixeira and Tanaka. And then the interesting thing to me from a free agent standpoint, Ed, was that the Royals actually tied the Yankees, but the Royals' 7 free agents were all minor guys like Kendrys Morales, Edison Volquez, Chris Young, Ryan Matson, guys like that. They only totaled right under $60 million. So even though they had the most free agents along with the Yankees, it was the other end of the free agent spectrum. And then the 10th playoff team, the Astros, kind of did a little bit of everything. They have first-round picks like Carlos Correa and George Springer, draft steals like Dallas Keuchel, international signings like Jose Altuve. They traded for veterans before the season, Evan Gattis, Luis Valbuena. During the season, Scott Kazmir, Carlos Gomez, Mike Fiers. They've got some really astute waiver claims in Colin McHugh and Will Harris, and a number of minor free agents or not big-ticket free agents, maybe a better way to put it, with Luke Gregerson and Colby Rasmus. So every year when we do this, and I think Jonathan would probably agree, it's interesting because there is no one-set formula, and sometimes when you do a team 2 or 3 years in a row, or you look at a team 2 or 3 years in a row, even the way they build their club shifts a little bit. I think we'll be seeing more of the Cardinals and more of the Cubs and the Astros down the line. I don't think this is just a one-year playoff run for those teams. And I think if we're doing this story 2-3 years down the line, we'll see a much bigger homegrown influence as their productive farm systems pump more players to the majors.
My goodness, what a year it's been. Now a question for you, our listeners. Can you think of a season in which so many rookies have made such great impressions? Many of those players helped in no small part getting their clubs to baseball's second season. Now let's take a look at the best under-the-radar moves, as in, no, we all don't remember, Jonathan, Jim, and myself, where we were when the Cubs acquired Jake Arrieta. Jonathan, start off with the Kansas City Royals.
Yeah, I think they've done a lot of interesting things, and it's always neat to look at the sort of quote-unquote smaller market teams and how they can be creative. Jim mentioned in terms of them being more active in free agency this year than compared to their team a year ago, and they didn't spend a lot of money. And then they were, really took some flyers on guys like Chris Medlin and bringing Ryan Matson out of retirement, and that's helped them out. But I think you have to kind of look at their international core. Salvador Perez, Kelvin Herrera, and Yordano Ventura, all three of whom obviously have played not just small roles on the team the last 2 years, but vital ones. And they signed for a combined $113,000, which is unheard of if you really think about it in terms of the money here being spent on the international market. So sort of tip of the cap to the Latin American scouting department for the Royals to be able to uncover these fines and sign them for market basement prices.
Jim, to you, let's keep it in Missouri. Talk about the St. Louis Cardinals.
Yeah, you know, it's I guess kind of continuing the theme Jonathan was of bargain homegrown players. You know, the Cardinals did an unbelievable job in the 2009 draft. You know, two of the first three picks, and this would have been a good draft in itself, were Shelby Miller and Joe Kelly, who they have since turned into Jason Hayward and John Lackey via trade. So that already would have been a pretty nice start right there. But they did an unbelievable job in the later rounds, Ed. They got Matt Carpenter, who is a fifth-year senior at TCU. They signed him for $1,000 in the 13th round. He's a two-time All-Star. He's led the National League in doubles two of the last 3 years. You know, he's exceeded expectations, and so did a couple other guys they drafted even later. Trevor Rosenthal was a two-way player at Cowley County Community College. Took him in the 21st round, signed him for $65,000. His fastball took off, and he blossomed into a closer. You know, in short order. And then the 23rd round, they took Matt Adams, who was kind of your classic bad body, small college performer. You know, he didn't not exactly the big league body you look for, but he hit 495 in 2009 to lead Division II. He hit 454 in his career at Slippery Rock, and they signed him for $25,000 in the 23rd round. All three of those guys have far exceeded any expectations, and you could see a fourth bargain guy, you know, potentially on their playoff roster, depending on Yadier Molina's health. Their next catching option would be Travis Tardamella, who was a $25,000 signing in the 19th round, also out of a small college, Cal State LA. So, Cardinals really cleaned up in that 2009 draft.
Jonathan, what about the high-spending Los Angeles Dodgers?
I got to go back for a second. Did you say Matt Carpenter signed for $1,000?
Well, he was a fifth-year senior. I mean, he was at one point not even playing that much at TCU, Jonathan, because he was not in great shape early in his career and kind of had a come-to-Jesus meeting with the coaches that kind of got him in line. But, no, he was not only a $1,000 signing, he was a fifth-year senior. I mean, he could have been signed the previous 2 years and went undrafted. And he was another guy who – his body was in better shape, but he wasn't, you know, not only has he exceeded expectations, but I think he, not just offensively, but defensively, you know, I don't think anybody gave him much of a chance to play third base or second base in the big leagues, and he's right. Done a credible job at both. But, yeah, you got to give him credit. I mean, you know, I think the Cardinals deserve credit for finding these guys, and in a lot of cases you have to give these players credit for working very hard to get better.
I just want to point out for you that the Cardinals signed a two-time All-Star for an amount that, like, we could afford. We could have signed Matt Carpenter for $1,000 for our podcast. Anyway, the Dodgers. Highest payroll in baseball, but I'm going to go with the sort of smaller free agent signing in Justin Turner, just in terms of the value that he's had. Signed back in February of 2014, and he's just been tremendous. I mean, signed for $1 million in 2014, re-upped with the Dodgers for this year, $2.5 million, you know, which by the standards of what they're spending in Los Angeles is next to nothing. And I don't think you can understate the value that he has had for that team. Over the 2 years, he's hit .314, .384 on base, .492 slugging. He's played four positions for them at various times, really stepped in almost as an everyday third baseman when they really needed it this year. So with all the big spending that they've had, and, you know, you could go on and on and on, Zach Greinke, you know, being able to afford a guy like Yasiel Puig on the international market, on and on. I think it's interesting that it's that sort of smaller role player signing that probably has as much to do with them making the playoffs now for the third straight season.
The three of us, of course, had the Texas Rangers going to the playoffs. Jim, tell us about them.
Yeah, I will. And I was going to say, just on Justin Turner, he's amazing to me, Jonathan. I mean, that's a guy I saw play at Cal State Fullerton in the College World Series, and he was just kind of this scrappy, gritty player who you thought ceiling, maybe he could hit just enough to maybe carve out a utility career. And, you know, you're reading off those numbers he's done the last 2 years in Los Angeles. You know, he hit 340 last year as a part-time player. And I kind of in my head said, man, what a fluke. There's no way he's going to do that again. And he didn't hit 340, but he set a career high with 16 homers this year. That guy just keeps getting better and better. You know, with the Rangers, Ed, you know, I think the move that kind of made everybody sit up and take notice, although we didn't necessarily think it was going to wind up putting them in the playoffs necessarily this year, was when they went out and traded five prospects, including three top 100 prospects, to get Cole Hamels at the trade deadline, and that certainly has paid off as expected. He went 7-1 in his 12 starts, but there was another guy that got in that trade. You know, they actually threw in an extra prospect to get left-handed reliever Jake Diekman in that trade from the Phillies. And that same day, with much less fanfare than the Cole Hamels deal, they traded Tomas Tellez and Cody Egi to the Marlins for Sam Dyson. And those two guys really saved their bullpen. I mean, Diekman pitched in 26 games the last 2 months with a 2.08 ERA. Dyson pitched 31 times with a 1.15 ERA. You know, we saw Sean Tolleson kind of wear down a little bit during the last week of the season. It wouldn't surprise me if Dyson and Diekman play an even greater role in the playoffs. And, you know, again, you know, the Cole Hamels deal, you know, and earlier, you know, before the season, Giovanni Gallardo, those were deals where people kind of noticed, okay, they're going out, they're trying to make a major upgrade to the rotation. I don't think anybody realized the impact that Jake Diekman and Sam Dyson would have on their bullpen and their team, you know, down the stretch. You know, as important as Hamels was, I don't think they could win the division without those two relievers.
Jonathan, the New York Yankees are back in the playoffs for the first time since 2012. What about them?
Yeah, just a quick thing on the Rangers. I think most of us, when they made the trade, most people saw Hamels and they really said, all right, well, it looked like a 2016 move. You know, they weren't out of the race, but anyone thought they were really in the race when that trade was made. So kudos to them for seeing that, and then it really clicked with those guys in the bullpen. I'm going to stay in the bullpen with the Yankees. You know, it's been kind of interesting in terms of what they've done the last couple of years, obviously known for sort of the big splash signings. Before the 2014 season, they went out and were very aggressive on the free agent market, and that didn't really pan out for them during the 2014 season. They got a more reasonable version or a more expected version of Brian McCann in this year. But I kind of like what they were able to do to shore up the bullpen. Now, Jason Shreve has kind of struggled down the stretch, and whether or not he has a role in the postseason remains to be seen. But especially in the first half, he was tremendous. That was in the Manny Benuelos trade, and they've been working on getting Shreve for quite some time from the Braves. And then they really traded from a position of strength. They had catching in their system. The Pirates clearly like catchers from the Yankees. They got Russell Martin from them. They got Chris Stewart from them. Then they wanted Francisco Cervelli, and they got Justin Wilson in return. And Wilson has been a really vital part of that bullpen, and not just as a lefty specialist. He's got arm strength. He can miss bats, and he's going to be very important, I think, to help them shorten games if they want to play deep into October.
Jim, the Houston Astros lost 100 or more games three straight years, and yet here they are in October. What about them?
Yeah, they do. They do have a core of talented young players. And two moves that I think have paid off better than anybody would ever imagined happened even before this regime took over, the Jeff Lunau regime took over. In 2007 and 2008, they had a pair of signings that have really paid off. You know, Jose Altuve, you know, Jonathan, we've been talking about guys who have signed very cheap. You know, I don't know if our pipeline podcast budget would extend to $15,000, but if it did, we could have signed Jose Altuve out of Venezuela in 2007 because that's what the Astros paid for him, $15,000. Obviously, his size was an issue. You know, people, you know, questioned. I think even coming up through the minors, until his last year in the minors where he started the season by hitting over 400 at high class A Lancaster and playing the futures game, then hitting 360 in double A, everybody kind of questioned, you know, okay, he's performed, but what kind of impact can he have? And we've seen it. I mean, three-time All-Star, back-to-back 200-hit seasons. He's been tremendous. And then the year after they signed him, in 2008, they signed Dallas Keuchel as a seventh-round pick for $150,000. And I've lost track of how many College World Series I've been to, but Dallas Keuchel's another guy I saw in the College World Series. I saw him win twice for Arkansas in Omaha, beat Virginia twice that year, and you know, respect him, but he to me looked like more of a college competitor, a lefty who could throw strikes and, you know, keep the ball down, but he didn't have wow stuff. He wasn't going to blow you away, and I thought, okay, you know, maybe that guy has a chance to maybe be a back of the rotation guy, or, you know, maybe more realistically a middle reliever. I mean, I don't think he topped 90 very much. It was more of a sinker than a velocity on the fastball. Changeup was probably the best pitch, but it wasn't unbelievable. The curveball was nothing special. And here you fast forward, 7 years later, and he's probably going to win the American League Cy Young Award, and he had a really nice 2014 also. So I think those two moves, if Jose Altuve and Dallas Keuchel, to quote Denny Green, were who we thought they were, then the Astros probably would not be in the playoffs right now.
I can't think of a team that gets less respect than the Pittsburgh Pirates, Jonathan, and yet here they are, transformative. You live there. Tell us about the Pirates.
They still don't get respect. This is their third year in a row in the playoffs.
I don't think. Right. I think that when you look at all the teams, I just think that they don't get the attention that the Cubs get because of the market size and the Cardinals with their constant success. And I think it's unfortunate because Hurdle and the people in the front office there have done a fabulous job.
Yeah. Okay. Well, fine. I'll get off my homer soapbox. But I'm going to, you could go in a lot of directions. We're talking about the cheap homegrown players. You look at the outfield corners and Starling Marte and Gregory Polanco, who signed for a combined, I think, $210,000, somewhere around there, $215,000. So we might have to have a bake sale to afford them, but we could add them to the pipeline roster as well. But I'm going to talk about probably the quietest trade deadline deal that may have had the most impact of any deadline deal outside of perhaps David Price going to Toronto, Price and 2-0, and that's J.A. Happ. Because, I mean, Happ looked kind of lost in Seattle. He's a guy who's been in and out of rotations, shown some signs of being, number four, number five starter. The Pirates trade for him. And listen, the Pirates now, deservedly so, have a reputation as a place where pitchers go to have their careers re-energized or revitalized. And a lot of that has to do with Ray Searage, the pitching coach. But boy, I mean, Happ comes out, first start terrible. Overall, 7-2, 1.85 ERA in 11 starts, 9.8 Ks per nine, 1.8 walks per nine. He only gave up more than two earned runs twice. And throughout that first bad start, and he gave up three earned runs in one other start, and that's been it. And he went from a guy that I think they were hoping just could fill in a gap to a guy who I give the ball to, in game three of a division series. Depending on how actually they may end up being game two, Gerrit Cole pitching the wild card game. But to me, it's, Cole one, Liriano two, and Happ is three. They didn't have to give up much to get him. I don't think anybody noticed this deal when it happened. But another job well done by Neil Huntington and his staff of identifying a guy who maybe just needed a little bit of a different approach. They, tinkered with some things, and boy, they maximized his value since getting him.
Jim, I think the biggest acquisition for the Chicago Cubs was bringing Joe Maddon in, but obviously they made other moves, and here they are, and a lot of people think ahead of schedule.
Yeah, I think they are ahead of schedule, and it's I don't know if I'm as much – I wouldn't call myself a Cubs homer like I might good-naturedly call Jonathan a Pirates homer, although I would ask Jonathan – I'll digress here for a second. A lot of people up here who know what I do for a living bemoan to me the fact that the Cubs have to play the Pirates in a one-game, win-or-go-home thing. And while on one hand I do think winning the division should stand for something, on the other hand – the divisions are somewhat random, and I don't think there's any question when you look at how tough that was a division and how the schedules are unbalanced. And even if you don't factor that in, the three teams with the most wins this year are the Cardinals, the Pirates, and the Cubs. I think those are the three best teams in baseball, and it's a shame that after one game, one of those teams will be eliminated. And it's kind of unfortunate, I think, for the Cardinals that they have to face either the Pirates or the Cubs in the second round. And none of that seems as fair as maybe it could be, Jonathan.
No, you're probably right, but I guess, what I sort of said to people here, and it's almost unfair when you look at how many wins both the teams had, but the Pirates against the bottom dwellers of the NL Central played very poorly against the Reds and Brewers. They played they played 500 ball against those two teams, the teams that they're supposed to beat up. They actually beat the Cardinals probably somewhat handily. It's kind of ridiculous to think that they'd have 105, 106 wins. But, yeah, I mean, with the setup in today's game, you know, if the wild card game bothers you, then win the division. But it is awfully hard to think about the fact that, you know, and even from the Pirates and Cubs standpoint, they have to play that one game. You get by that one game, oh, and then, yes, you have the second best record in baseball. You got to go play the Cardinals. So,
well,
you know,
how about the Cardinals? I mean, the Cardinals won 100 games, and really, I don't understand why they wouldn't recede. Why don't the Cardinals get to play the Mets, who, you know, no offense to the Mets, but I don't, you know, I think they're clearly an inferior team to the Pirates or Cubs. And the Cardinals' reward for posting the best record in baseball is they get to play either the team with the second or third best record in baseball in round two. But anyway, I digress. This is not a complaint about the postseason format podcast. But getting back to your question, Ed, about the Cubs, yeah, the Joe Madden move was tremendous. Although I would say on that one, I don't know if I would call that one underrated or unhyped at the time, because I think a lot of people thought good things were going to occur from that. But, you know, kind of building off, again, this Cubs-Pirates theme, I'll second Jonathan. And with the Cubs, I'll go with the deadline move that I don't think anybody realized would have nearly the impact at the time that it did. And this was back when the Cubs were rebuilding. They weren't looking to pick up a veteran, but in 2013, you know, if you go back and look at the first 3 years of the Theo Epstein Jed Hoyer regime, they traded pretty much their two best starting pitchers every year to try to build up the farm system and build up the organization. And they signed Scott Feldman as a free agent before the 2013 season. And then at the deadline, or at the beginning of July, they traded Scott Feldman and backup catcher Steve Clevenger to the Orioles, and they got Jake Arrieta and Pedro Strop and two international bonus slots at the deadline. At the time, Jake Arrieta was a big-time prospect coming out of college. He was a fifth-round pick out of TCU. I guess he did overlap. He would have overlapped with Matt Carpenter, who we talked about earlier. Anyway, he signed for $1.1 million. He was an above-slot guy, but he just could never get it going in Baltimore. At the time of the trade, he'd been in Baltimore for parts of four seasons. He had a 5.46 ERA. He comes to Chicago. He has a decent first, you know, sort of half of a first season with the Cubs organization. Took off in 2014, and this year, I don't know if he'll win the Cy Young Award, but, you know, because Zach Greinke and Clayton Kershaw had great seasons too, but it's a season that would win the Cy Young Award most seasons. And it's I was looking at his, in the second half, I think he's given up something like 3 earned runs in his last 12 starts, but since the All-Star break, I think he has the second lowest ERA as far back as MLB can track that stat, back to like Ferdy Shupp, I think, in 1914 or 1916. So it's been a unbelievable year for Jake Arrieta. He had a very strong year last year, and certainly, I think the Orioles, or not the Orioles, the Cubs, when I talked to him about this, I mean, they knew, you know, they were getting a guy with some arm strength, and he could spin the ball a little bit, and, you know, I think they were hoping, okay, you know, this guy could help our rotation. I don't think they thought they were getting a Cy Young Award caliber guy, but that's exactly what happened. And, you know, as a nice little bonus, they got Pedro Strop, who's been a key reliever for him for 3 years. So a tremendous, tremendous trade for the Cubs.
Jim, for years and years, everybody's been picking the Blue Jays. Well, finally, they are in October. Tell us about them.
Yeah, you know, when you're looking at under-the-radar moves for Toronto, I mean, there's a couple obvious ones that have been touted for several years, even when the Blue Jays weren't making the playoffs. I mean, the Blue Jays got Jose Bautista from the Pirates in a trade for Robinson Diaz in 2008. And then they signed Edwin and Eric Carnacion to a one-year, $2.5 million free agent deal. And both those guys broke out in a huge way after they got to Toronto. But, you know, again, those stories have been told. The one I wanted to kind of bring up that hasn't been told nearly as much is Kevin Pillar. I mean, this was a guy who, you know, again, we've talked about bargains. Jonathan, another $1,000 guy, so we could get this guy on the Pipeline podcast budget as well. Kevin Pillar was a $1,000 senior sign in round 32 in 2011. You know, he was a small college guy, Cal State Dominguez Hills. He set an NCAA Division II record with a 54-game hitting streak in 2010. His reward for that was getting undrafted, or not getting drafted, I guess is a better way of putting it. Goes in the 32nd round in 2011, hits 347. in his pro debut. Nobody really takes that quite seriously because it's a rookie ball and he's 22. He goes to the Midwest League, low class A, in age 23, wins the MVP award. He hits well in high class. He basically hits everywhere he went in the minors. You know, one of these guys who has to prove himself every step of the way. Gets to Toronto in 2013 for about 36 games or so. Doesn't do great. Gets 53 games in 2014. Does okay. And this year he was solid. He wound up playing 159 games. I don't think anybody saw that happening at the beginning of the season when Dalton Pompey was the more highly touted outfield prospect. Hits a solid 278. Hits 12 home runs. Steals 25 bases. And he probably deserves a Gold Glove. It seems like weekly. On a weekly basis, you could see highlights of this guy making unbelievable catches in the outfield. What a tremendous value for a guy, a Division II player, overlooked. He was the 979th overall pick in the 2011 draft, and I feel very confident saying that he's a little bit better than the 979th best player in the 2011 draft.
Sandy Alderson told Mets fans a couple of years ago that the organization was playing for 2015. Jonathan, in a very weak division, and of course the epic collapse of the Washington Nationals, the New York Mets go to the playoffs. Tell us about them.
Yeah, and I guess Mets, long-suffering Mets fans are just relieved that they weren't the team that collapsed, and that they were poised to take advantage of it, and they've done it. You know, as Jim said at the top. With a ton of homegrown talent. And, I think a lot of people outside of the area who don't follow the Mets may think, oh, New York, big market, big free agent or trade acquisitions. But they have a ton of homegrown talent. Even guys like Noah Syndergaard, who doesn't count officially as homegrown because they got him from the Blue Jays, he finished his development in the Mets system. So, the player development staff gets a tip of the cap to that. But based on sort of what we're talking about here, I think you can't not take Jacob DeGrom in terms of being much better than expected. This is a guy, a ninth-round pick out of Stetson. He was a shortstop originally. He signed for $95,000. Had Tommy John surgery in 2011. Really was not on radars at all. I think some people maybe thought he'd end up being a reliever just because of the durability. You worry about the arm having Tommy John surgery that early. And all he's done is win Rookie of the Year and then go to the All-Star game. 9.5 strikeouts per nine in his career since he's been in the big leagues. And with all the talk of Syndergaard and Matt Harvey, I mean, DeGrom's been as good as any of them. And for $95,000, as a guy who's a complete under-the-radar draftee when he was taken. Kudos to the Mets scouting staff at the time for recognizing the upside that maybe a lot of people did not see in DeGrom when he was coming out of college.
Great job by both of you. Let me put you on the spot, each of you. Who wins the AL wild card game? Who wins the NL wild card game? Jonathan, back to you.
Oh, boy. Predictions, huh? I'm going to say that the Houston Astros will win the AL wild card game. And I'm gonna prove to Jim that I'm not a complete homer. I'm going to say that the Pirates do not find a way to beat Jake Arrieta in the wild card game.
And I will show my profound respect for Jonathan just by agreeing with him on both of those picks. I also believe the Astros and the Cubs will win the wild card game, although obviously in one game anything can happen.
Oh, don't!
I have never heard that expression before. Anything can happen. Wow, that's great. We got to trademark that, baby. That'll do it for us, guys. Terrific work. Thank you both. On behalf of Jonathan Mayo and Jim Callis, I'm Ed Randall. Thanks for listening to the MLB.com Pipeline Podcast.